Oh, I saw Wesley Snipes.
What?
Like, he came into your store?
Yeah.
Were you like, hey, Loki, what did you think of Black Panther? And he was like, I should have been in that motherfucker.
He probably would have said exactly that.
Does he look old?
No, like, he's an incognito, so he's wearing, like a golfer's hat and big aviators and stuff, but...
Did he bust out some karate moves?
He did do that. That kind of gave him away. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me today, we have Keith Foster and Ashley Lawrence from San Diego.
Hello.
And with us is you, Cassidy Robinson, from Los Angeles.
Yes, and today we are bringing back Keith's wife, Keith's better half, to wrap up this whole Oscars 90 extravaganza that we started a few weeks ago back at your place.
Plus, I figure the Oscars, it's like the length of a movie, so that's sort of like our movie review this week.
I think this year... I don't know. I didn't see if it was the shorter or longer than normal, but it felt like it went for a while.
I actually think it was a little shorter.
Like the runtime of the actual Oscars?
Yeah.
I actually thought I would agree with Keith, it kind of seemed shorter, plus it didn't have that whole 10-minute flub at the end.
Yeah,
that kind of messes everything up. Although I was surprised, and we're going to get into all sorts of things. I was surprised that they brought back
Dunaway and
Dunaway and Warren Beatty,
Dick Tracy.
I was like, you're really going to roll the dice on this again? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's thought, and they're all like, whatever.
It honestly makes me kind of feel like I know the whole conspiracy theory about it being fake is last year is bullshit. But it does, like...
It was too messy to be fake. Like, I know when something's real. And, like, I know, like, how when, a program isn't going the right way, what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And that was real.
I also love that Cassie knows when things are real.
Yes, he does. He knows. He knows truthers.
You guys are both in theater. You know when a production's going weird. Well, Keith knows especially because there was that whole... high school production of Sleepy Hollow, where everybody had to play everyone else's role because one of the leads was accidentally hung on stage. It's a whole story. We don't have to get into it.
Yeah, we don't need. I can tell that story another time.
You two are like turning into like those old grandpas who love to repeat stories over and over.
No, this is
like, I feel like this I've heard the this podcast. Story so many times in my life.
First of all, when you marry me, you marry all my stories. Second of all, I don't think I've told the story on the podcast. I mean, we're not just recording this for fun. We're recording this for the four people that listen.
Honestly,
for
posterity. I'm shocked that it has not come up on this podcast before. How many times it comes up in your regular life.
That's a teaser, then. That is a teaser. We will have to eventually tell that in some sort of context. But today we are going to talk about the Oscars. We're not going to review any movies.
Hashtag Oscars so talked about.
Yes. Hashtag 4 days after the fact. But we are gonna discuss the telecast, and then we're gonna go over our scores. Now, if anybody listened to our first Oscar episode where I was the Paddington episode, I think like two or three episodes back.
Paddington 2.
If you listen to that, and you'll hear us make our predictions, we'll go over it again as we go through this. But I wanted to start the conversation off with just the some of the stuff about the telecast, the Oscar program. Mm-hmm. First off the list, obvious, what did we think of Jimmy Kimmel?
Loved him. And I am not a Kimmel fan.
So we didn't watch last year because he hosted last year, and I actually I didn't watch that. I saw the big controversy thing at the end, but I didn't really watch the whole show.
I watched it online like the day after because I've heard so much buzz about that show last year.
Right. I watched the highlights and some of the speeches, but I didn't watch the whole telecast either. I think it was at work.
No, I really liked Kimmel as a host. I felt like he did a good job of, you know, he did a good job of towing that line of like, these are going to be fun. Oh, I can't believe he just said that jokes without pushing it too hard like Seth MacFarlane did. And some of the bits were really funny. I loved the jet ski bit.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I have that in my notes. And by now, these notes are pathetic, but like I started writing notes, you know, to like be prepared or whatever. It's like I just turned my Oscar ballot over and to like jot things down.
Yeah,
and
I
can't even read half of them. They're like scribbled so terribly. Like it reminds me that when I first started reviewing movies for the school newspaper back in high school, I was going to try and be like professional journalist or whatever. And I was going to like bring a little notepad. And like halfway through the first movie, I just was like, fuck this. I can't do this. so the exact same situation. But I did have down here J. Kim's game show winnings bit. Because he did the jet ski was a thing for a while. And then I think he did something.
Yeah, they also went a trip to Lake Havasu.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, he was sweetening the pot.
Mm-hmm. Although, yeah. do you think, and obviously it was just a bit and nobody was actually going to get a jet ski, but do you think that did have an effect on people's speeches?
I think that guy got a jet ski.
Huh?
I think they legitimately gave that jet ski away.
To somebody. But do you think that really had an effect on people's speeches? Because only, I think maybe two people got played off.
I don't think that was the point. I think it was purely a joke. It was a well-written joke. And I think he should have used it more. Like, I think this is something that I did mention to Keith afterward. I was like, I wanted him to bring back the joke more. Like, I wanted him to run out with the time and be like, okay, Meryl, that was 3.2 minutes.
Yeah, he only did it, like, once at the beginning. Then they mentioned, like, Havasu. And then you kind of forgot about it till the very end. I think a couple more times of just, like, Or like have a screen that maybe compares some people's times.
Yes, or like a leaderboard.
Or a ticker at the bottom counting down the speech times.
Yeah.
But that would be kind of technical.
Yeah, but it's... Are you fucking kidding me? Did you see that insane set with the fucking crystal of space?
Right.
Archway.
Whatever was going on there.
Platforms. I mean, it was a gorgeous set design, but they could have fucking... had a screen with some times on it.
Maybe. I thought it was in there just enough. I mean, nothing else about like his monologue or whatever. I guess I could have rewatched it, but nothing about his monologue really stood out to me. Like, I'm trying to think of like funny parts from it right now. Nothing's really coming to mind.
He had a lot of solid jokes. Mm-hmm. Like, and usually Oscars are hard. It's an award show.
Insanely
monologues
hard.
Are difficult. Yeah. And not a single joke of his bombed. And that's why I was so impressed. But they were all political, but they're all very smart political. Like, he never said Trump, but he would say, well, the White House is watching Fox News, so we know this is happening.
Right. I don't think you would have... I don't know, like... why he or anybody else would be cagey about not mentioning Trump by name. Like,
I think they were just trying to keep it classy. Like, you know, I think had it not been the 90th, maybe it would have been a little more political. I think they were just
I thought the show was pretty damn political. And I'm not saying that
not
in
like
necessarily
the Golden
a bad
Globes.
Way. Well, I didn't watch the Golden Globes, but I...
Oh, yeah, this is pretty toned down from Golden Globes.
Yeah, it was like they got it all out with the Golden Globes so that they could keep the Oscars more pristine. Like, that was the thing I felt was it... They were definitely trying to keep it classy. Mm-hmm. And if you... I don't know if either of you have watched Nick Kroll or John Mulaney. They just hosted the Independent Spirit Awards.
Right, which is usually a lot more fun to watch, actually, but...
their monologue was cutting. It was like brutal. And so, I mean, I think he kind of towed the line of like trying to get the broadest appeal possible. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a bad thing for the Oscars. Yeah.
No, it's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his first joke was about women assault. I just remember this because my bingo, I got a bingo on that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I played the bingo sheet too. And it was funny. One of the people at my Oscar party, I went and I did Oscars with my friends Katie and Amanda over at their apartment. And Katie actually would have beat me in bingo, but for the majority of the show, she didn't know who Jimmy Kimmel was. Oh, so she didn't know that one of her squares was crossed out.
Oh my God.
She thought it was Jimmy Fallon the whole time. And then she's like, I'm just waiting for Jimmy Kimmel to do blah, blah, blah. I'm like, he has been like the whole time. It's just like, oh, so she actually would have beat me, but I called it out first. So technically she won though.
I thought Jimmy Kimmel was a good host. I thought it was fine.
The only bit he did that I didn't think landed, was the 8-year-old self bit. And that wasn't his fault. It was the kid's fault.
Well, and you don't tell a kid of, say, dirty magazines. Like, we all know that joke. It's just too played out, and it's really awkward. And it's awkward for the child.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just felt like the whole thing was like, I mean, obviously it wasn't the case, but it felt like they had just written that whole bit backstage, like, minutes before. Like, it wasn't the best delivery. It wasn't the best, like, back and forth. The whole thing just felt weird.
I agree. That bit wasn't as great, but I thought the movie theater thing was really cool.
Yeah, that I wonder, because it reminded me a lot of Oscar Selfie. Is this the new thing now? Is there's this unplanned kind of loosely structured thing where at some point they get to stand up and do something strange or do something interactive? Like, is that going to be a feature in the Oscars from now on?
Well,
I
think
it's been a trend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just like you want to, every year you kind of want to top yourself. So,
right.
I think it's going to be hard to top that, but
well, you know what they should do? They should have Tommy Lee in a giant box play drums upside down.
Why?
What?
I don't know. I was making a strange reference to Motley Crue Roadshow, but
it bombed.
Yeah, that was bad.
To top the thing that they did last year, anyway. So fashion.
Oh my God, let's talk about fashion.
Let's talk about the fashion now.
Joan Rivers was alive.
So
this was the year. This was the year of color. It was
very
bright,
colorful.
Bright, bright. It was like, let's forget about Golden Globes.
Yeah, they got their statement out of the way with Golden Globes.
It is all about bold color choices. And my prediction of pantsuits was horribly wrong.
There were two pantsuits. Emma Stone and Jodie Foster, both rocking pantsuits.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Most of these are about what people are wearing. Most of mine, I'm in air quotes, notes. And they read like Trump tweets because they're just short and weird. Like, Viola Davis, pink dress, bad.
Oh, no. Okay, if we're going to talk about Viola Davis. Viola Davis comes out in this stunning, vibrant Barbie pink. I haven't seen this vibrant of a pink since the 90s, really. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wears this color pink, and only Viola Davis can pull it off because it is so bold.
Mm-hmm.
And her hairstyling was fantastic as well.
Okay, everything. No. Everything no that you're saying right now. Pink, I think you could get away with doing a hot pink dress like that, but maybe it was the cut. Maybe it was, there was three things that was going poorly with that whole choice. The hair I thought was terrible. It looked like Diana Ross when she was being rained on in that one famous performance in Madison Square Garden. And it was at this weird, like, low angle. They, like, whenever anybody approached the mic, it was just a slightly tilted down angle, like an up the nose sort of angle. That plus the dress plus the weird hair thing that was happening where it's like slick back and then poofy in the back. It was not a good look for her. And I think Viola Davis is beautiful. I've seen her on the cover of many magazines looking beautiful. That was not tonight.
I love fashion advice from Cassidy Robinson. It's just so silly. You know nothing, Jon Snow. But okay, continue.
I actually didn't love it. I felt like the dress itself looked a little cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was just the color. I didn't notice the hair, so I can't really say much about that.
I mean, it could be. It did have sort of a sequiny, shiny.
Yeah, thing. I can see where you get
the cheapness with that. But it's just that color was just so eye attractive. Like, your eyes were on her, period.
That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was awful. I'm not going to, like...
To contrast, I have Taraji P. Henson's black dress. Good. She was like...
She introduced Mary J. Blige, right?
I don't remember exactly what she was doing. Yes, it was earlier on in the show.
I do. I have my notes for her is black, tulle, sexy.
Yes.
Tulle was also a bit... It was a big fashion thing this year. A lot of people had a tulle-esque items to their dresses. So and I was...
You're going to have to describe what that is.
For some of the listeners, i.e. me and Cassidy,
I'm thinking of the prog metal band.
I was too!
Oh my god! Why did I do a fashion segment with you guys?
They supposedly have a new album coming out this year.
Anyway.
They've had a new album coming out for the past 5 years. But go ahead.
More important things. Tulle is a type of fabric.
Okay.
Now, it's not necessarily that tulle was used on their dresses, because it probably wasn't. But the idea of like that flowy mesh kind of see-through aspect...
Okay.
But it can be bunched up into a sort of a bow-esque stuff. So that's why I described it as a black tulle sexy. Something
okay. Who else yeah, I saw had, a lot of that sort of fabric being used.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Emily Blunt was kind of a tulle structured.
I didn't like her shoulder poofs.
There was a lot of shoulder pads going on this year.
Guys, you know what? Yeah, time's up. We got to bring the woman back in power. We got to bring those shoulder pads back.
Okay, if we're going to talk time's up, I know
we're not. We're still on fashion. We can get to that after the fashion.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to politics. I kind of had mixed feelings about Emily Blunt's Victorian weird up the neck kind of thing.
I loved the baby blue color. I loved the like almost Peter Pan esque stylize of it.
The more I looked at it, the more I accepted it.
She's gonna be Mary Poppins, right?
Yes. I didn't think it was ugly. It just looked strange to me.
She walked out of the set of a movie. Like, it looked like costume.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why I loved it. I don't know. Guys, I love most of these dresses. Like, I was gaga for all the fashion this year.
There weren't any in particular that I thought looked not good.
Margot Robbie's looked terrible.
Oh, Margot Robbie. What was she wearing?
I was all white, and it looks like this terrible... like glued on garland tinsel that was draped across a very, very simple white dress. And it was just like this weird dangly garland that I couldn't stand. I like wanted to rip it off. It was like as if somebody glued it to a present, but it was like falling off.
Did she ever change costume or?
No, that was just her dress.
Yeah, I think it was just her dress all night.
I'm Googling it. And
so am I.
I didn't hate it. I don't know. I can see what you're saying about it looking like garland, but it didn't stand out to me.
There was nothing about it that like offended me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't think anybody looked like particularly not good.
Mm-hmm. Can I challenge that? I think this is the most. This is the one I've actually seen articles written about. Mm-hmm. Sufjan Stevens' jacket.
No,
you were all about that.
Yes, and it had matching pants.
You know what? Actually, Keith, you would 100% wear that jacket.
Yeah, I would. It was. I liked it. No, the only thing I will say is it might have been a little tonally inappropriate for, like, it might have looked better on like the Coco set or something. No, I liked it.
You know what though?
And I think it's bullshit that men don't get to wear like colors and patterns. Right. Although
a lot of men actually wore color this year. This was actually a big, huge year for men in color.
Yes. So, but it's always like these dark sort of masculine colors. You know, why can't we wear pink stripes with green cactuses?
Is that what? Yeah, there was.
It was a dragon.
It looks like he made it himself, which is fine.
100% a dragon.
It looks quality.
My weird note for this was Sufjan Stevens' jacket. What the fuck? And then in brackets, but it makes sense for him.
No, I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Holland came out with a double-breasted jacket.
Yeah.
He's the only one rocking that.
Yeah, well, I agree. Men seemed like they were having a little more fun with the fashion this year because there was a lot of, there were a lot of colors. There were, Chadwick Boseman's suit was incredible.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey, he had a red velvet bow tie.
Oh, yeah, he did.
All the Shape of Water guys were wearing matching, like, they were like these sort of green, aqua, like swirly, cool handkerchiefs in their pockets.
Right. I think Armie Hammer was wearing crushed red velvet, too.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. It was like a dark crimson. His suit was really good.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
Although Armie Hammer could wear a trash bag and make it look good. Let's be real.
Back to the women. Gal Gadot looks amazing in everything.
Yeah, she.
But really, same her story. Diamonds. Oh my god, those diamonds! I could not stop staring at those diamonds. They're so big.
So
if I was in that theater, I would have gone up and be like, "I don't want any popcorn. I want those diamonds you're wearing."
So I saw you taking notes the whole time.
Okay.
There's literally just fashion.
Yeah.
All you took was fashion notes.
Because it was a great year for fashion.
One I wanted to point out that I saw somebody else pointed it online, but I thought this was really cool, was Rita Moreno.
Yes.
When she came out to present, she was wearing the same dress that she wore to the Oscars when she won back in like 1962 or whatever.
It was 62, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this same dress?
Yeah, same dress. I mean, and if you haven't looked that up, it's pretty cool.
Right.
To see that. It's slightly altered because it was a halter when she originally won, and obviously she changed it to a sleeveless.
Yeah, a little updated.
Right.
But yeah. It's the same dress, which I think is really cool.
Now, there's one prediction we made, talking about the time periods. We thought that that somebody might make a joke or a bit about somebody in the audience or in the Academy who's been there since the first Oscars and in whatever it was 90 years ago.
I don't remember this.
That never happened. The closest they made to that joke is Jimmy Kimmel made a joke about Christopher Plummer being old.
Right.
No, okay. First of all, I have no recollection of anyone making this prediction. I think you said it.
Cassidy literally just said he made that up.
It's on the record, you guys.
Fuck you. All right, okay. I'm going to have
before,
to go.
Before we moved on, Tiffany Haddish, who's a fantastic upcoming...
Okay, this is your last dress comment.
It is my last dress, and only because if you watched her SNL, which I highly recommend you do, she wears the same dress that she comes out to present in and does a whole monologue about wearing... She said, I bought this dress for $5,000, and I'm going to wear it to every goddamn event, and she wore it to Golden Globes, I think the Emmys, and officially to the Oscars. So hats off to Tiffany Haddish for just doing it.
Plus, her segment with
Maya Rudolph.
Maya Rudolph.
Oh, so
great.
Good.
That was
also
the best.
Maya Rudolph's married to Paul Wes Anderson.
Paul Thomas.
Whatever.
Anderson, yes.
That he's the same.
They've been married for a little while now. Actually, they have a few kids.
Okay.
But
before we get too off track,
I wanted to use that as a segue into speeches and presenters, because yeah, I thought the Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph were by far and away the best presenters that weren't Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh yeah,
hands down,
for sure.
There
weren't really a lot of good ones. Like the Star Wars one was really awkward.
Oh,
although
so bad.
BB-8 was there.
He was.
Yeah, and that was, and they should have just let it be that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like making these jokes.
And also, why was there 4 of them? You know what I mean? Like, there was too many people.
Yeah, it should have been like just Mark Hamill and BB-8, or just Oscar Isaac or BB-8. Also,
like,
or...
Lupita was there. Like, if she's already there, just use Lupita.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was like a CGI alien. And I think she'd rather be, like, recognized for her role in Black Panther at the moment.
Were there any other presenters that, like, stood out to you, or any speeches?
So, at the end, it was a little weird, because they had Emma Stone, who won Best Actress last year, present Best Director.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And normally, they have the Best Actress from last year present Best Actor, and Best Actor from last year present Best Actress.
Sure.
But instead, this year, it was all women.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Clearly, because we did not want Casey Affleck to come and present for women in any capacity. Especially due to Time's Up.
Since we're going there, so Casey Affleck won an Oscar last year. A lot of people were upset about it because of is it domestic violence allegations?
No,
it was just being a creepo.
And sexual assault.
Okay.
Yeah.
A woman actually worked on a set with him, and he would literally sneak into her hotel room and sneak into her bed after multiple times of telling him no and telling HR.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not discounting any of that. I just didn't know the story. All I know is there was, you know, people are upset that he was able to win an Oscar, and he did.
Last year.
They didn't bring him back this year, which I get. That makes sense. But isn't it a little problematic to give Kobe an Oscar?
Okay, so there's a little bit of this going on. The two big stories as far as like the Time's Up movement and the winners of the Oscars, we have Kobe winning, who has allegations that I don't know all the details of, but they are there.
He actually went to court for rape. You know, a lot of these people haven't gone to court. You know, these allegations haven't materialized in a legal way. And Kobe's have. Like, it's gone that far. You know what I mean?
Okay. I was never sure. I don't follow sports, so I literally didn't know all of the details of that. I just knew that he was in trouble for something.
I don't know all the details totally either. To be fair, I just it's a little
right. The other one that the people were talking about was Gary Oldman.
Gary, yeah,
who was a shoo-in for the award long before.
I did not know about Gary Oldman. Great.
So Gary Oldman, it's not like general creepery or sexual assault like a lot of them. It's with his ex-wife. There's allegations that he beat her with a telephone.
Oh,
yeah,
Jesus.
It's super fucked up. So again, his allegation is, and I'm not trying to defend it. I'm just trying to tell the story as I know it. It is a little older, and it is something he did deny in court during their divorce proceedings. Again, I'm not saying that excuses it if it's true or anything like that.
And I guess recently, within the last few days, his son wrote a piece about it, sort of defending him or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know.
Again, with the Kobe thing, I literally didn't know all the details of that, so I couldn't say one way or the other. I do know that I lost that category.
Yeah.
Cassie, if we want to go into that category specifically, I actually did see every single animated short this year.
You did see them?
I did see them, but I saw them after we recorded last time.
Right.
And by far, Dear Basketball was the worst animated film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the whole Kobe thing or anything. It's just I generally didn't like that one, and I thought it was kind of like,
yeah, and horrible.
Like, to me, I watched it, and then at the end I saw that Kobe Bryant was a producer, and I was like, oh, He 100% did that for taxes. Like, he's doing it to money launder. Yeah, he's money laundering into this film production for this. Like, the production quality of the actual animation is terrible. It's like the squiggly lines where they clearly didn't race at all.
It looks like the kind of like the Take On Me video.
Yeah, yeah, the sort of animatics look.
Yeah.
But I actually, now that you're saying that, I remember the Oscar clip. And Katie, who's there with me, who's an animator, she works over at Titmouse Animation. She was able to kind of give us a skinny on like why that would win and blah, blah, blah. Besides Kobe Bryant, I get the co-person, the animator that he worked with is like a huge deal in the world of animation. He like was an old Disney person. He worked on like Little Mermaid and stuff like that. So that person also has a lot of pull. I guess he had done a short before this that was also in a similar style. So that's just what he's doing right now.
You know, honestly, if anybody's going to go watch it, go home, watch Lou. It's the Pixar short that should have won because it's Pixar. And then two, if you have the time, watch Garden Party because it's rated R and super fucked up.
Oh, really?
And made me feel icky after watching.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
That's the one I want to watch.
I voted for Negative Space because it sounded arty.
It is very arty. So Negative Space is about this guy monologuing about his father's death and how he got close to his dad by like packing. Like they would pack a suitcase together and like the whole thing is about packing. And at the end, it just ends with him looking over his dad's casket and it's like, wow, there's a lot of negative space you could have packed better with.
Oh, interesting. I thought that by negative space, it would be kind of like a duck amuck kind of thing, where it was about like the art of making something and using negative space.
No, it's really depressing. It was like somebody clearly lost their dad this year and they made an animated short about it. Like, that's just kind of what it felt like.
Oh, okay.
And then Revolting Rhymes is the British one. It reminds me a lot of Room on the Broom, if you ever saw that one a couple years ago back.
Mm-mm.
And it actually is part one, and they just released part two. So I'm actually pretty excited to watch that, because the first part is like 20 minutes long.
Oh, that's pretty long for a short film. Going back to speeches, the only one that really stood out to me, because a lot of people were up there saying, like, you know, Guillermo del Toro said something about like about being an immigrant.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Mexico,
a lot of people of color who had things to say about that. But the only one that like really stood out to me, and maybe it was because of the performance of it, if we're allowed to say that, was Frances McDormand's.
Well, yeah, I mean, Frances McDormand's crazy.
She's a little bit of a kook.
Yeah, I doesn't make me dislike her. I think it only makes me like her more.
Sure.
But also she was very specific. I think that's why it stands out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I think it's great. You're using the platform to say something, and it's something that's actionable for change, you know?
Right.
I love that she's saying, and if you're serious about times changing and times being different, inclusion writer, like that's what you should do.
Like, I also appreciate she was like, don't talk us about the party tonight, call us on Monday, pull us into your office, like,
yeah, I actually
tell times, like, that was like a really good,
it didn't come off to me as like just being a strange like woo like whoopsie-doo character, like I'm just a free spirit. It came off to me like she had things to say, and like, and I like the fact, because a lot of...
Didn't she literally say, I have things to say?
She did say that. She did. But she had actual suggestions. She had, like, action to take. And one thing that I think is sort of missing from the Me Too Time's Up thing, other than the exposing people aspect of it, there's not a lot of, like, talk in the industry of, like, these are the things we're going to do.
Well, that's sort of true, but not true. Like... So Wonder Woman 2, for that production, they just passed like a whole new set of guidelines, like HR policies, and stuff like that. So it is happening. It's just not what you're hearing about on Twitter and at the award shows. Mm. I think there's so many people that are sort of on both sides of Me Too. Like, I think there are people that are genuinely trying to use it as a movement for change. And then I think it does get muddied by like the social media aspect of it as well. So I think that's why it seems like there's nothing happening with it.
Well, it's not that it seems like nothing's happening with it. Although I do think that the Me Too move, well, I don't know if you want to talk the movement, but it's like it's quieted down quite a bit since the award season started and since the whole Aziz Ansari thing happened. Like, I feel like that was a moment where everyone's like, let's figure out what's going on for a minute. And
yeah,
which I think is good.
And I think that's for good reason. I think it's not as, yeah, I don't know.
We don't have to have an opinion about it. I'm just saying that's what happened. But yeah, I like that she used that moment
also,
to say.
Also, I think guns kind of changed the national conversation a little bit.
Which Jimmy Kimmel made a joke about.
Yeah, I mean, there was one on SNL, too.
I'm just saying, Jimmy Kimmel had some really great writers because his show is not this good.
I actually, you know, like, I'm not the biggest Jimmy Kimmel fan as far as late night goes. I think he is perfectly fine. Like, if that's the one you watch, that's okay. I think he's just as competitive as anything else. Like, I'd probably rather watch him than Jimmy Fallon most of the time. But what I will say about him, that's, I think he has become one of the more outspoken and one of the more political of the bunch.
Totally. Well, besides Colbert, I mean,
but Colbert you can't to get me, more political like, Colbert. And this is just an opinion, and this has nothing to do with movies. But Colbert to me feels very performative in his politics. Like he's putting his finger in the air and seeing which way it blows, and then his writers figure out something on that. Whereas Jimmy Kimmel to me feels much more like he has truth of conviction when he goes out there. And maybe it's because he cries a lot. I don't know.
I think a big part of it is it all started with healthcare because of his son.
Right,
so
which was a very personal thing.
Yeah, he has a personal connection to it, where someone like Colbert might not necessarily.
Right, and Colbert has been a satirist forever. Like, that's his thing. Whereas Jimmy Kimmel was on The Man Show.
Well, okay, yeah.
I mean, I think you're discrediting Colbert a little bit. Like, Colbert is...
Trust me, I've had this conversation with Cassidy 1,000 times.
And it's just, he's on a different intellectual level than Kimmel, so it's very difficult to compare them.
Yeah, they have different styles.
I would say Kimmel is political emotionally, where Colbert is political intellectually.
I think Colbert's more clever in general. This isn't Late Night Wars. Let's get back to the Oski Doggies.
We haven't even got to like categories. We haven't. Let's get going.
Do you want to break into that? I think we've covered.
Let's do it.
Sure.
We already did animation.
I'm just gonna go over our.
Yeah, I agree.
Our categories, the ones that we decided to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already tallied all three of us, and. I won.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. What?
I won.
No, you haven't.
I did a little bit, yeah.
No, you are a fucking liar. Okay, first of all, fuck you. Second of all, I guarantee you set up your points. Fuck you, I tallied it up. How many points do you have? I had fucking 17 points, you piece of shit.
I have 19, and actually you have 18.
You lying motherfucker.
I got 11.
Which, by the way, I want to point out to our listeners,
mm-hmm.
this bullshit that they are hearing live, that Cassidy edited,
mm-hmm.
He came up with the point rubric after he came up with the spreadsheet. So if there's a fucking way he won, I wonder why.
I thought it would be kind of fun. I thought like, hey, you know
bullshit.
What? Since we bothered to put, because I didn't think about like any kind of rubric before. I was like, okay, so we talked about Vegas and Heart. I just thought that would be kind of fun for recording fodder. But then I was like, well, since we have them both here, I will say you get 2 points for your Vegas if you won.
Okay.
And then 1 point for your Heart if you happen to be right in that respect.
I think it should go the other way.
And 3 altogether if you got both.
I literally got 1 Heart right. one heart.
Yeah, my heart
shattered
was,
this Oscars.
My heart was not doing very well. Okay.
So I think our listeners just love listening to something they have zero idea.
Yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about this a little bit. So cinematography, Keith, you had guessed Dunkirk, which was a good guess, but your heart voted for Blade Runner.
Uh-huh. Which one?
And you know what, Keith? You're right. I tallied this a little bit wrong. Hold on one second. you get a point. I had you at zero. That was an accident. You get a point because your heart voted for Blade Runner, which would mean that we are actually tied at 19. Okay. So we'll see how much I fuck this up as we go through.
Yeah, we fucking
I voted for Heart and...
You leave all this shit in.
I voted for Heart and Vegas for Roger Deakins for Blade Runner. And this is the first year he has ever won an Oscar, despite the fact that he's one of our best living cinematographers. And despite the fact that he has been the Susan Lucci of cinematographers forever, he's been nominated 1,000 times over. But this year he actually got it. And yay, because I really thought that that might not happen. I actually thought, kind of towards the end of the night, I thought, like, your Dunkirk guess might be right.
Yeah, because they won a lot of the technical tech awards stuff. Yeah. Which, if we're going off our ballots, I did pretty good on there, too, because, yeah.
Next category.
And then you voted in this category, you voted Shape of Water, which again was a good guess. And your heart was on Mudbound, but you didn't get either on that one.
But oh, yeah, I'm aware.
original screenplay, Keith, you voted Lady Bird, but you wanted Big Sick. Get Out won, so no points there. And I predicted on the last one, this might be the award that Get Out gets.
Yeah, you did.
And it did get it, even though I wanted Greta Gerwig to get it for Lady Bird, so I only got two.
I was pretty happy that Jordan Peele... Yeah. That was one of those ones where it was kind of... This whole award thing is sort of fucked, because I was like, I wanted everyone to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. This is one of the few years where I've seen most of the movies. I usually seen all but one or two, but this is one of the ones where it's like, it was a sort of a Sophie's Choice situation where there's like three or four of them. I was like, I would be okay with a lot of these got it.
Yeah, it's very rare that I think that I'm like not upset with the way the Oscars turn out.
Right, right. You had voted Three Billboards for Vegas and Lady Bird for Heart and Get Out. Or no. Am I looking at the right thing?
Yeah, Get Out won.
For Ashley, and Get Out won.
Yeah, again, yeah, no points. Yeah, and I think we'll really know. Like, again, I got only one heart for this entire thing, and truly, my heart was shattered because Lady Bird got zero awards.
No.
And that's why I did so poorly.
I think we all called "Call Me by Your Name" as being the winner of the adapted screenplay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except Ashley and I both, for our heart, wanted Logan.
Yeah,
I just and here's the thing.
Too much of a long shot.
I knew that wasn't going to win, and I haven't seen Call Me by Your Name. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's fantastic. I just, the Academy does have this weird bias against
comic book movies,
sci-fi against action,
animated feature. We all guessed right. This one was a pretty easy Coco.
Yeah,
yeah.
Although my heart really wanted Boss Baby. But I didn't put that because I did want Coco.
You know, this is a fun thing. We watched the Oscars with quite a few diverse group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our friends, Nydia, has family who lives in Mexico. And when the one performer came out to perform the song, she went like nuts. And I was like, oh, is he a Mexican singer? Like, I had no idea who he was. And he's like a huge pop star in Mexico. So it was kind of fun to see that.
Oh, right. During the musical performances.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was totally wrong on song. I think I put the Sufjan Stevens one just because it was the only
silly
best picture song.
I think Pixar pretty much always gets animation and original song.
Yeah, those
it's like you don't split director and movie. They just go together.
Sure. Keith, I think you're the only one who got all 3 points for director, Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro. Yep. Both me and Ashley wanted to have Lady Bird win, but Ashley put
Vegas in my heart.
And Vegas and your heart, yeah. Or Lady Bird.
It hurts, though.
Lady Bird kind of got the shaft.
Yeah, it kind of did.
Which, I mean, the fact that it was even nominated for a first feature, like this little indie film about, a girl growing up in Sacramento, that's sort of incredible anyway, that it got as much attention as it did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Academy's reasoning for not giving it more awards was... because
Greta Gerwig's going to win.
She's going to be around.
Yeah. She'll win in 2 years or 5 years or whatever, which I think is a dumb reason to not award a movie.
I agree.
I kind of hate the Oscars for this legacy bullshit.
The only time
they... giving Gary Oldman the award when it's like, was his objectively the best performance, or did his studio just pay the most money and market the most to get him his legacy Oscar?
Right. Like, no, I agree with that. And it seems like the only person they don't have a problem with doing that with is Meryl Streep, because they'll just nominate her until the cows come home for anything she does.
Yeah,
they're probably going to nominate her next year for Mamma Mia 2.
Oh, before we almost skipped over this important fact, is the writers of Remember Me for Coco, the same writers for Let It Go for Pixar, I guess he double EGOTted.
Yeah, he's double EGOT.
Oh, wow.
He's the only one to double EGOT so far.
Hmm. Keith, you were the only one that got Best Supporting Actress for Allison Janney.
I really wanted Laurie Metcalf, but I just, from all the other awards and all the buzz, I just knew it would be Allison Janney.
Yeah, had I actually looked at who won the SAG award, then I would have had a better idea. But I thought I thought Metcalf had it in the bag. Like that one was genuinely a shock.
I don't think she actually won anything, right? Like, she didn't win any of the awards yet.
Did she for the Golden Globe?
No.
For comedy or something? No.
Oh, unless they split it, but I don't think she did.
No, I don't think so, yeah. But, both me and Ashley had put Heart and Vegas on Laurie Metcalf. And
well, she still won in my heart.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best Supporting Actor, we all called... Sam Rockwell.
Yep.
And he gave a good speech, as I recall. Like, his was punchy and short, but funny and very Sam Rockwell. Yeah.
It didn't land any, like, really big points or anything, but no. It was the first one of the night, you know?
Right, that's like the first one. They trick you into thinking they're getting to it fast by giving you a big one right at the beginning, and then they do a bunch of shit you don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
Both you and Ashley had hoped Richard Jenkins for Shape of the Water, and I had hoped for Willem Dafoe for the Florida Project. But
I think if I had seen Florida Project, I probably would have as well, but I haven't seen it, so.
I have to Redbox it.
It's in the queue.
Yeah.
It's in the queue.
Lead actress, we all called Frances McDormand. That was a no-brainer. But none of us put her as our hopeful, our heart.
Well, I think it's because we knew she'd win. She was like too much of a shoo-in that she was just like.
Yeah.
Also,
she's already won an Oscar too.
Yeah, and for a pretty she was similar great.
Role.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know.
Not really.
Well, different, but a very similar kind of movie.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's a similar performance. It's actually sort of the polar opposite. But. Yeah, I don't know. I love Frances McDormand. She's incredible. I felt like Sally Hawkins had a harder job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
represent ASL. What?
And I felt like she was more emotional and just more relatable.
But the Oscars is never about nuance.
Well, and both of you wanted Saoirse.
Yeah, and I knew that wouldn't happen because she's young and I think she won recently and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I thought she would be my Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah.
And maybe. Yeah, I mean, she could have been. Like, I would not have been surprised. I would have been, but...
Lead actor? Me and Keith called for Gary Oldman. Ashley, you actually thought that Timothée Chalamet might win for Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, for the same reason of Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, okay. Give it to the young guy.
Mm-hmm.
To surprise the pants off of him. And you had... both you and Keith had wanted it to be Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out.
Yeah. Well, and oh man, and then when they were showing the Oscar clips and it's that scene where he's like getting hypnotized and it's like this emotional story and
yeah.
I was just like, fucking he deserved that so bad.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, and it ended up being Gary Oldman, which we knew it would be. Me and Ashley both thought that Three Billboards from Ebbing, Missouri would win Best Picture, but I will say this, on the night of the Oscars when I was watching it, I was like, I'm feeling Shape of the Water today. Like back then, 3 weeks ago.
He did win quite a few that night, yeah.
And I think that it really came down to the wire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but no, I called it Shape of Water, which I know a lot of people are upset. I mean, I don't know. People are dumb. I don't care what people think.
I love that movie, and I'm totally okay with it winning. I love the fact that Guillermo del Toro, who's been in the game for so long and is, a true visionary, a true, like, visual auteur, that he got his movie out there. And I saw a really cool tweet by John Carpenter, so, you know, basically it was like, congratulations, you know. So I love the fact that there was a lot of horror representation or genre representation in the Oscars. Like, the fact that Get Out, like, a movie released by Blumhouse.
Yeah.
Like,
written and directed by a comedian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it came down to me and Keith are tied at 19 points, and you have 9, Ashley.
Oh, I have less than I thought. I thought I had 11 points.
But what did you guys get on your official ballots of your Oscar parties?
I get 12 out of 24.
So my official ballot, there were a couple that I changed.
I also changed
from this prediction just for funsies,
right?
And I ended up, I think I got 16 out of 24.
Uh-huh.
But a couple of them I knew I would get wrong, so I could have gotten an 18.
I got 14 out of 24, so.
Oh, so I.
You beat me.
This was the best I've done on my predictions and stuff, so I was pretty happy.
It helps to have seen the films.
So, I think this means we can officially put the 2017 movies to rest, right?
Yes, let's never talk about these movies again unless they're in context to another review.
In context to another review, I do want people to tweet or Instagram me on who went and watched Paddington 2 after our review. And if you haven't, stop listening.
I just quickly wanted to go over some movies, some anticipated movies from 2018, the year that we're currently in. And, see what people have to think. What are some movies that are coming out that haven't already come out that you're excited to see?
I feel like they don't even need to bother releasing anything except Avengers Infinity War this year.
So no Solo for you?
I'm not that excited. I'm going to see it, but I'm not super pumped for it.
The Han Solo movie? Yeah, the first trailer came out. I love Alden Ehrenreich. I think he's a really fun actor. And I thought it was cool casting, but when I actually saw the trailer, I'm like, eh.
I'm not super into this Star Wars expanded universe, because A, it's not expanded. Mm-hmm. It's all just prequels, and I don't need to know Han Solo's story. I think it looks fine.
I'll reserve judgment for sure, but just off of a trailer, I'm pretty lukewarm.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
I am excited about Incredibles 2.
Yeah, that's pretty high on the list.
It's been like 10 years.
Yeah, that's the one Pixar sequel I wanted. Instead, we get like 1,000 Toy Stories, 1,000 Cars movies, another prequel to Monsters, Inc., like all these things. I'm like, another Finding Nemo. I'm like, what the fuck? You have a superhero franchise in the making. Do it. That one's actually probably in my like top three to be excited about, which is a bad thing. I should be less excited.
Ready Player One, which I'm sure. excited for because we watched the Comic-Con panel and just finished reading the book as well. So
yeah, that's one of my big ones this year. I did see these posters they just released.
Super annoying, right?
They look really bad too.
They're really cashing on this like nostalgia thing. So I hate everything about the marketing of this movie, but I'm hoping that the movie itself is better.
Well, I like the trailers, but these posters are just...
It's like Matrix poster that was like... It looks like something you'd see on Reddit.
Well, and so, Ashley, you're looking at the like the really cool Drew Sturzen style. Mm-hmm. That one's cool. Mm. But like the first one they released where he has the really weird long leg looks really bad. And then they did these other ones that just look like bad Photoshop.
Yeah.
And they're just like parroting other movie posters.
Yeah. It's very Stranger Things.
Yeah. I'm looking at them now.
And they just, and my thing is like, I don't even care that they're doing the nostalgia thing. Cause that is sort of a big thing for the movie. Mm-hmm. I just think they don't look good. Like they look like poor Photoshops to me.
Yeah, I'm excited for the movie itself, though. But yeah, I'm not in love with the marketing. I am excited about Isle of Dogs, the new Wes Anderson film.
Yeah,
the stop motion film comes out this month.
That looks really fun.
Yeah.
I loved
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Even though I'm a Wes Anderson fan, that was still kind of a surprise how much I liked it.
Yeah. Because
I expected it to be kind of like cute, but whatever. And I ended up like especially liking it.
Okay. It's fine.
And I've liked his last few movies a lot. So I think he's on a good streak right now. So hopefully this doesn't break it.
I agree.
And then the most sexiest movie of 2018, Aquaman.
I can't even a little bit care.
Oh, I'm so going to get so wet for Aquaman.
I am so done with the DC universe as far as any kind of emotional investment. At this point, my bar is so low for that.
But Jason Momoa.
How do you feel about Sicario 2?
Mixed. I loved the first Sicario. That was one of my favorite movies of that year. I think it was like number three of the movies of that year on my list. But Denis Villeneuve is not coming back as director.
Okay. So we got a Pacific Rim 2 situation.
We do have a little bit. Which but the awesome. Trailer is very promising. It's still a good trailer. And it looks like they maybe Deakins is there as DP again because it looks really good. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it works out. But I'm cautiously optimistic for that.
Yeah, that Sicario 2 and Pacific Rim, I feel the same about. They're both sort of wild cards for me. Mm-hmm.
For Pacific Rim 2, as long as it is fun, I'll be okay.
Yeah,
like I am not expecting it to be anything more than that because that's not even one of my favorite Guillermo del Toro movies, let alone some other jackass.
I know, we don't need to relitigate.
I know.
Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
And I'm ABBA fan.
I'm a little bit excited for that one.
I can't tell
only
you.
Only because I don't even know how they're going to sequel that. Or I guess prequel that.
I don't know.
I think the movie that I know the least about that I might be the most excited for is Shane Black's Predator.
Oh, yeah. That's coming out?
Yeah. So I don't know if it has a hard release date, but September.
You know what? I'm kind of on that one. It's been so long since Predators. I'm pretty much over the whole Alien franchise at this point, like totally lost my wood for that. So with this, I'm kind of like, do whatever you want to do, guys. Like, just make it good.
I really wouldn't care if it was, if Shane Black wasn't involved.
Yeah, that's the one thing. But at, even yeah. even that, I'm kind of like, is it going to be on Christmas? It better be. Christmas in L.A.?
You know, Fantastic Beasts, I didn't realize the sequel is this year. Mm-hmm. It says it's called Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which is a terrible title.
Yeah, ooh, that's bad.
But, and then I honestly didn't realize it was coming out because the screen, it says Crimes of Grindelwald and then Fantastic Beasts in very tiny letters. So I was like, what is this? Like, I didn't even know what it was advertising, and it's like something that I love.
That's going to come out later in the year, right?
Oh, I'm sure November. It's, they always it's do November releases.
Okay. Now, last chance to mention anything you're particularly excited about, and then we get to the fun stuff.
Okay. I don't know what the fun stuff is. The last thing that I'm really excited about, probably the most out of anything I've seen so far, and again, I haven't seen everything. And things will come out after festival season. South by Southwest is happening right now. But there's a movie called Thoroughbreds that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy. And mm-hmm. I think one of the last Anton Yelchin roles. Mm-hmm. And it looks really kind of like fucked up. Like it looks like American Psycho meets Heathers or something. Like it's
they describe it as the new Cruel Intentions.
I hope it's better than that. I mean, I'm low-key a Cruel Intentions fan, but not for good reasons. Like, that movie is trashy as hell.
Yeah, that's the point.
But Thoroughbreds, like, it looks like it could be cool.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And I like a cool dark comedy, like...
X-Men Dark Phoenix. I didn't know it was this year, but I have been all about wanting a Dark Phoenix.
We'll see.
X-Men.
And my love for Jean Grey, and I've liked all the reboots so far, so fingers crossed.
X-Men New Mutants comes out this year, and that I'm looking more forward to.
Okay.
Between the two.
I mean, Deadpool 2, I'm excited about. What movies are we dreading this year? Are we just like, oh, fuck, I do not want to see that. I don't give a fuck if it's for the podcast.
I'm just not going to see the ones I don't want to see. But I wanted to ask you guys, what are your feelings about Ocean's 8? Because I'm rooting for it to be good. I think it's a cool idea to do a female...
Yeah,
gender swap.
It's the same as Ghostbusters. I really want it to do well. I want it to be funny, but if they don't do it well, they're going to get shit on hard, and that's what sucks.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, if they approach it the same way as they did Ghostbusters, where they're like, let's turn it into Bridesmaids with a heist, then it's going to be Garbage Town. But if they actually like try and write a good movie with real characters, then it could be good.
I haven't been crazy about, like, the sort of what I've heard about, like, the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff I've heard. Like,
yeah,
I think Sandra Bullock was doing a press junket or something, and it sounds like that might be a little obnoxious with, like, pushing a feminist agenda, and I don't need it to do that either, like... Just make it a fun heist movie. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. As far as like the female gender swap thing about any of these, I'm totally cool with it. Like, I like the idea of like the female Expendables, blah, blah, blah. But it's not because of like, now they got to, you know, let's make a big political to do about it. I think that is already doing itself. You don't have to do any more other than to do it.
Whereas if it's just like focusing on a good movie with like compelling characters and a good story, that's going to do a lot more for, you know, feminism and for that movement than
pandering.
Yeah. And from everything I've heard, I'm afraid it's going to go that route, but
I can tell one problem. A, why is Rihanna in this movie? B, why is Tiffany Haddish not in this movie? And that's all of their problems right there.
Two pretty good questions, but Rihanna was like actually kind of fun in Valerian.
Valerian.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. And then a bunch of comic book movies that we're going to see no matter what. Ant-Man and Wasp, I'm weirdly looking forward to, even though I kind of mostly don't care about the first Ant-Man.
No. Category is, what movies are you dreading?
I don't I don't even, Mamma Mia 2, here we go again. Like, that's not, I'm not seeing that.
Here we go again.
Have you seen the trailer for Venom?
Oh, yeah. I don't give a shit about that project.
Yeah.
Which is
so far, I'm not excited about that.
Like, that's Sony's desperate attempt to hold on to their Spider-Man
IP. Hold on to whatever they're holding on to.
Yeah.
The first Purge guys with the
Purge Island.
Yeah! Have you seen the poster? It's just like, it's like a Make America Great Again hat, but it just says the first Purge.
You know what? I think that I'll give this to the Purge as a franchise. I think they're mostly bad movies, but they are fun in concept, and they have the best marketing team behind them.
Yeah.
They do. Their marketing is...
Their marketing is like 1,000 times better than their movies. Because then you go to see them and it's like, it's just kind of depressing and poorly shot and poorly acted schlock. But they always make me want to see it when I see the trailers or when I see the posters.
Oh my God. Yeah. I just read the description of Skyscraper.
Oh, yeah.
That looks so bad.
Rod wanted me to do a hot take on that.
What's that?
So bad.
It's a movie with Dwayne Johnson.
Oh.
It's High Rise.
Mm-hmm.
Meets Die Hard.
Okay.
Meets Fast and the Furious.
Sure.
Meets everything else Dwayne Johnson has ever done. I mean, it looks fucking garbage.
I mean, here's the log line, Cassidy. Framed and on the run, a former FBI agent must save his family from a blazing fire in the world's tallest building.
Is it just a fire?
Skyscraper.
Like, okay, so then it's just a spiritual remake of Towering Inferno.
No, it looks way dumber than that. And from the trailer, I didn't see any fire. I swear to God, it was like terrorists or something.
Yeah.
Also, that log line leaves out the fact that Dwayne Johnson only has one leg.
Oh. Well, that changed.
One of his legs is like a prosthetic.
That's a horse of a different color then.
Yeah.
You just made me interested.
I'm kind of interested in it. It's like the fun hot trash movie.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson with one leg doing like whatever, like acting like a superstar, like with one leg.
Oh, look up the poster. He's jumping from a crane onto, like, an open window.
See, the building's on fire in the photo.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I swear it was, like, terrorists, though.
I don't know. I just remembered a movie that I have absolutely no hype for. And I'm actually... Every trailer I see just makes me already mad at it. The new Jurassic World.
Yeah, that looks like trash.
Really didn't care for the last one.
I haven't watched any commercials for it.
You're better off.
You saw the one.
Oh, yeah. It was bad.
Yeah.
Well, they're just like the volcanoing dinosaurs off a cliff for some reason.
Yeah, and Chris Pratt has to go back to save his BFF pet dino.
Yeah.
And also, did they not learn anything from Jurassic Park 3?
No, they learned nothing.
They learned nothing from how many bad Jurassic Park sequels now?
But we have to go back to the island. Your vicious man-eating velociraptor that you trained and for some reason has a kinship with you is there.
Right. Don't even care at all. Like, unless there's so nothing else to review that week, I really don't.
Oh, no, we're fucking watching it.
Oh, yeah, I will 100% still give them money.
Yeah, we are.
It's just not going to be good.
We are suffering through that
I'm putting that one in the same category as the Transformer movies now. It's like, I know it's going to be bad. I don't have to see it to confirm it.
I don't think you understand the point of this podcast, Cassidy.
Well.
We got to wrap this shit up.
Yeah, I think that pretty much does her. Next week we are going to review the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie
for Netflix homework.
Mm-hmm. I've already forgot what the subtitle of that was.
The only thing I'm excited about this particular Netflix homework is the girl from Skins is in it, and she's like doing literally nothing except for the Maze Runner series that nobody watches.
The MTV Skins or the original BBC Skins?
The original BBC Skins.
Okay. So there's that. to look forward to, I guess. But if anybody has any opinions about any of the things we talked about this week, you can email us at jabberandthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us regular archives at jabberandthedrone.podbean.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Jabber Podcast, and you can also...
And Instagram now.
Yes, we are now on Instagram, also at Jabber Podcast, so go there and instantly gram us. And you can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/JabberPodcast. You can follow me individually at BC Cassidy. Keith, what's your stuff?
Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. Yeah, you can go to my website too, www.keithfosterkid.com.
Ashley.
Yeah, I've got a Facebook and I got a Instagram. I believe it's Vero19 or Vero21. I don't remember.
How do you spell that?
VROW. And again, just tell me if you've seen Paddington 2, and if you don't, you don't have a soul, so don't friend me.
Or you slept on it and it's not in theaters anymore. That is the other thing that could have happened. I write reviews. You can read them at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. And we have friends who do podcasts you should be listening to. Denise just put out the last episode of Mascot Diaries with the jazz bear from the Utah Jazz.
Oh, fun.
That was her big celebrity mascot guest that she was keeping a secret. And you should be listening to that as well as Rod and Denise over at The Listening Party. Their new format is about 6 or so episodes in. Pretty interesting. I'm enjoying it so far. Lot shorter episodes than they used to be. You should also be listening to Patrick and Dennis over at Almost Educational and Patrick and his father at Make Dad Read Comics, as well as Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums Podcast and Mike Fallick at Let's Start a Cult. Adam Conning over at the Adamant Podcast.
I have a couple more that I'm going to mention.
Okay.
Because I told them to subscribe.
Okay.
And this is my test to see if they listen. I'll give them the first shout out's free. a few podcasts that just sort of got going. The Super Friends Podcast with Keith James. There's your one. The Most Excellent Tommy Gallen Podcast. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I'm supposed to be a guest on that soonish.
Oh, cool.
And then Campfire Shit Show.
Okay.
There's your one. You better listen to mine, Meryl, or I'm done.
Well, if you weren't going to be a guest before, you're definitely not now.
Yeah, fuck it.
And that's the show.
Our sign out for this week is two words. Inclusion writer.
Bye.